Hey, this is Tom Waits, and you're listening to Post Rock Paper Scissors. Thank you. All right, welcome to Post Rock Paper Scissors. This is Armand here. Today is one of our curated podcasts. On the show today, we've got Niels Fromm. How's it going, Niels?
Very good, thank you. How's it going?
Doing just fine. So Niels curated today's playlist. He came up with all the songs. Before we talk about the songs that Niels picked, how's it going, Niels? What's new in the life of Niels Fromm?
Oh, actually, I'm on a holiday in the USA right now, and I'm sitting on a porch in a really, really lovely landscape close to Portland. I'm here with a friend and just relaxing, basically, and found some time to pick some songs for you today.
All right, sounds good. Recently, I've had two artists from the Portland area on the show, so I'm curious to ask you, what drew you to Portland? Because you're originally from Berlin, correct?
Yes, that's right. A couple of years ago, I think in 2008, I met Peter Borderick, and he's from Portland. And I started working with him, and one day we recorded something together, and he invited me to Portland to help him with a production. So I went over here and really liked the city. So since then, I came back here quite often and made some friends. And yeah, I love this part of America very much.
Okay. So, Niels is a modern classical composer, would you say, or?
Yeah, I think that's all right.
Okay. So, you mainly, you started off on the piano, is that right?
Yeah, I had piano lessons and played classical piano and jazz piano, all kinds, and did some electronical works too. And lately, I worked on the piano a little more. I recorded some albums which are based around the piano. And so this is what people mostly think I'm doing. But I have to say that I'm actually mostly working in the studio doing productions for other musicians and doing mixing and mastering. And so I like to experiment with sound in general, and the piano is a great source of sounds. So I'm pretty haunted by that. But it is not that I'm only into classical music. Basically, I just like to work with all kinds of music, even pop music, and I don't know. There are no limits for me. For me, it's more like a research about beautiful sounds in general when I think about music.
Sure. Yeah. Once we get into the playlist, people will realize that you're not just into classical music, because it's pretty kind of all over the place.
I thought it would be interesting to just show like few influences. I mean, the time today is not enough to show all of them, but just give a roundabout of music I like.
All right. Sure. So you mentioned that you work a lot in the studio. What would you say is the biggest difference between mastering your own music and mastering other people's music? And which is easier, I guess?
I think it's easier to master somebody else's music, because this last final step in a music production of mastering somebody's record is basically a psychological thing. You know, you just want to have somebody you trust who approves what you did and puts it together in a nice way. And most of the time when you work on music, you're so involved that you need some distance and a second pair of ears to just even out little edges or gaps or things which might not work, but you don't hear it anymore. So I would never master my own projects. I would always give it to somebody else to master it, somebody I trust.
Okay. So last year you released a collaboration with Anne Müller,
yeah, right.
If you want to talk a little bit about that, let people know what it was.
I worked with Anne Müller, who is a wonderful cello player, and she got in touch with me several years ago, and we took our time to work on a pretty complicated and complex record, which is based around electronica, cello arrangements, soundscapes, and piano. And yeah, it took us almost 1 year to record all of that, and then it took us another 2 years to release it finally. So it's actually an older project which came out 2010 in American Hush Records, a beautiful label from Portland, and 2011 it came out in Europe on my label, Erased Tapes 2. So it's available everywhere now, so maybe check it out.
Okay. Is there, I guess, a collab that you would love to do that maybe you haven't gotten the opportunity yet, or maybe something you're actually working on?
Yeah, I actually live my dreams by working with artists like Def Center. I just produced their record Old Splinters, which just came out on Type Records. That was good. It was so much fun to work with them. And I, on a regular basis, I work with Peter Broderick or people like Dustin Halloran. I just sat in the studio and did something with Olaf Arnolds. And yeah, people like that. I'm afraid I might forget somebody because it's pretty busy. Yeah, but I do mixing for them or just playing or production, mastering, all kinds.
All right. So let's jump into this first track that we played here. So if you want to talk about what's the song that opened up this this show with?
I thought I opened with a piano song. I got really into Hans Otte lately. He recorded or he wrote a body of work called The Buch der Klänge, Book of Sounds. And the track is called Part 10, and it's also Part 10 of the record. And it's an overall beautiful record. It's almost a shame to just play one song because the songs make so much sense together. But yeah, I like this particular piece a lot.
All right. So this next track that's going to start off this next block is pretty different from what we normally play on the show. Not to say, I mean, it's still a great track, but let people know about this because it might be a little bit of a curveball for people not used to this.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
No, it's fine. I mean that in the best way.
Nana Mouskouri, I mean, some people might be familiar with that, but Nana Mouskouri did a lot of pretty cheesy music throughout her whole career. So it's pretty hard to find actually songs which are nice. You wouldn't expect that she did really nice music with Quincy Jones. And I think she was in her 20s. Like, this was actually maybe the first real thing she recorded. She was this young talent from Greece. She got invited by Quincy Jones and recorded a whole album. I think it's not really an album, but it came out as a reissue late a couple of years ago. And yeah, this song from Nana Mouskouri is called Love Me or Leave Me. It's a jazz classic, and I think it's one of the most beautiful pieces I know.
All right, so we'll just jump into the song. Here's Nana Mouskouri with Love Me or Leave Me.
Love me or leave me and let me be lonely. You won't believe me and I love you only. I'd rather be lonely than happy with somebody else. You might find the nighttime the right time for kissing, but nighttime is my time for just reminiscing, regretting instead of forgetting with somebody else. There'll be no one unless that someone is you. I intend to be independently blue. I want your love, but I don't wanna borrow. To have it today and to give back tomorrow. For my love is your love, there's no love for nobody else. There'll be no one unless that someone is you. Love
Thank you.
All right, welcome back. Armand here with our guest Niels Fromm, who curated today's podcast. What did we play in that last block there, Niels?
Okay, we start with Nana Mouskouri. Then we had Linda Perhex. I hope I say that right, Linda Perhex. It's also one of these records which never made in the 70s, which never had huge success, like Sybil Bayer, for example, who also got rediscovered. And she, there was just an album out with some of her songs. And Shimmicum Rain, I first heard of her in a Daft Punk movie, Electroma. And yeah, they had her song in this famous desert scene. And I was so blown away by her voice and the sound of the production that I did a little research and found this recent album, which comes out under her name. Yeah, it's a huge hit, I think.
When I heard that song, I couldn't believe that it was from 1970.
Yeah.
I
mean, yeah.
It sounds like something that, you know, someone else might have released recently. It doesn't sound dated at all.
No, it doesn't sound. I mean, there's some songs on the record which sound a little bit like that era, but this particular piece is just timelessly beautiful, and I don't know. Yeah, she really she gets played a lot. So, yeah, I like that one.
All right.
And then we had Miles Davis. Miles Davis is maybe one of my biggest influences. He did this piece, The Panpiper, which you heard on a project called Sketches of Spain. And he worked with a really good composer called Jill Evans. And he works really slow, and he did only a few projects, mostly in the jazz field. But I really like his compositions on this record. The themes are all based on Spanish folk themes, and yeah, it's a record I always come back to.
All right, you mentioned that you also play like jazz piano, and you're obviously influenced by Miles Davis. Do you plan on ever like releasing a jazzy record?
Oh, jazzy? Maybe not. Maybe something more in a jazz way. But I think that the whole progressive jazz thing in the late 90s and the fusion of jazz and electronica and all that made it kind of difficult to approach it in a really nice way. But I think that the most beautiful jazz-related classical things are released on the ECM label, edition of contemporary music. And there you have people like Todd Gustafson which have both, you know, like a classical approach and a jazz approach. So I might work on that. I just think that, yeah, I pretty much found what I want to do on the piano already in a way, and I want to work on that. So don't expect me to have like a jazz trio recording soon or anything like that, but
okay,
it's definitely a part of improvisation. I think that jazz, when you want to learn about improvisation, you have to listen to a lot of jazz music, and it's really inspiring.
Okay.
Then we had John Sermon, which is actually an artist from the ECM label. He does music since the 70s, and he's a horn player. He plays all kinds of flute-like, saxophone-like instruments, clarinets, everything. And Dark Corners is a song which he recorded with a string quartet plus double bass. And I think this is a good example for a good marriage of classical sounds or classical style of writing and jazz improvisation, kind of. So John Sermon is also a childhood memory, because my father used to listen to this guy a lot, and I'm glad that he did this album in 2007 and still actively writing on his music.
Did the music that your parents listened to when you were a kid impact you in a big way?
Oh, in the biggest way, yeah. My father does photography, and he did some cover photographs for the ECM label. So he got all the free promotional copies as vinyls. So I spent lots of time just listening to his vinyls and had access to all this really amazing experimental classical jazz music. That saved me a lot of time finding all this by my own, for sure.
you mentioned that you don't plan on making a jazz record or anything anytime soon. So what is coming up next for Niels Fromm?
I just finished my new solo album. I'm not actually sure if I'm allowed to say the title here. Maybe my dear label will kill me for that. So I'm just saying that I have it done and it will come out in September.
Okay.
And it's music based around the piano featuring all kinds of instruments I can play. So the only person who played on there is me sitting in my studio at nights and just enjoying myself basically. So it's a really, I think for me, it's such a positive record because I just did whatever I felt like. And it's a little different from the recent works like Belts or Winter Music, which feel kind of like, especially the Belts felt like I have 2 days and I need to record an whole album. I want to improvise it and so ambitious in a way that the next thing I felt like should be something more pleasing for myself and something I just want to work on and master it in a way, not mastering the audio, but just feel really comfortable with every second of it. And so, yeah, I hope that people will like it.
Okay. I want to ask this question. The average person, whenever they think of, classical music, quote unquote, think of music that's 300 years old or, a lot of young people don't necessarily listen to it because they don't really know about modern classical music. So for those people, if they ask you what type of music do you play, how do you go about answering those questions?
I just say usually that I play my own music without singing. And it's kind of hard for me to put a stamp on it because even though I have a classical background, I listen to all kinds of music, and some people say that this song reminds them of a Radiohead song or things like that. Like you can definitely hear also electronical dance music influences in some of my live concerts where I just stomp on with my feet and just play really fast things, repetitive things like Steve Reich influenced ideas. So I don't really want to call it classical because I don't know what that means really. And
sure.
I don't want to be classical. Everybody who writes new music in a way wants to be contemporary, I think. So contemporary classic sounds horrible and ambitious. And modern classical is nicer than neoclassical.
Sure.
But all these terms, I don't know. I try to avoid them and just keep it open. And usually I say I play piano music.
Makes perfect sense. All right, so what's going to be this song that's going to start off this next block right here?
Tardis. Probably most people know the band because they are so influential on a lot of for a lot of people. And so for me, I listened to Tardis since I'm 16 or 17, followed all their albums. I love the studio. They work in Soma Studios, and the sounds they're getting. And yeah, this next song is not really how they sound, but I think they messed up this song in the most beautiful way. And I learned something about distortion. And the song is called Xing Yin Xian Yu Gek Eni Kui, or simpler.
All right, so I won't pronounce that. I'll just say this next track is by Tortoise.
We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back. Armand here with our guest Niels Fromm, who curated today's podcast. What did we play in that last block there, Niels?
We started with Tallis, the beautiful distortion track. And after that, I tried to find my way to Malcolm Cato, who also taught me a lot about drum sounds. This guy was originally a drummer for DJ Shadow also, so he worked with him in the 90s doing a lot of live drum and bass shows. And I think he really blew me away with his drumming style and also sound. The whole thing is just gorgeous. It's a 10-inch. I don't know the track title, actually. I just also don't know the title of the 10-inch. It just says... it is graphics on it, so I just found out on the internet that it's Malcolm Cato's release. I don't know, there was not a hype about it, so I think it's good to remind people that this is out there.
Sure. What's funny is after I heard that track, I had never heard of Malcolm Cato before.
Yeah.
And I wrote a little note. I just wrote DJ Shadow because this song reminded me a lot of DJ Shadow.
I know.
There you go. It's actually, he played drums for DJ Shadow.
That's the thing. I think they just had a big influence on each other. And you can still hear this old drum bass London thing, but in a really contemporary sound, like back to the 60s kind of like rough approach. So I love that. It's a nice marriage. And then we had a track... Actually, an old track. I think, I don't know actually when it was recorded, but it's a track from the band, German band Neu. I think they were actually also a pretty big influence on Tortoise and on all kinds of post-rock musicians. Neu was a crowd rock band which just had a pretty far ahead sound, I think. And sometimes when I listen to that band, I still think it's incredible that they recorded that in the 70s, and it still sounds so fresh to me. Yeah. Then we played a track from Moondog. I also recorded that from a vinyl, and right now I'm sitting in the sun, and I'm not really sure what the title is. Let's say Moondog, everybody's darling, great composer, blind guy with a long beard, just this... ridiculous, wonderful old man who composed tons of music, which still finds so many young people. And when I talk to people, it seems like everybody is kind of like when you hear it once, you fall in love with it. And he recorded a few recordings which got sampled by all kinds of musicians. And I think he will be contemporary all the time too.
All right. So before we end off the show, I guess we ask you a few questions here. So you are originally from Berlin. So if I ever took a vacation and went to Berlin, what would be the one place or thing I had to go see or do?
In Berlin? That's a good question. I would say you should go in the TV Tower, if possible, when the weather's nice.
Okay.
And do that after you rented a bike and just spent a day in the city. Then you should probably try to have a swim in one of the lakes or just sit in a park and drink a beer, because in most countries you can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there are a lot of nice things to do. It's a really beautiful city, easygoing place. It feels smaller than it actually is, and it's pretty, really mellow. And yeah, that's what I like about it. I think you can do tons of fun stuff there.
Okay. How is the music scene over there right now?
Pretty booming. I think that a lot of artists of all kinds of genres go there because of the really inexpensive living costs. So it attracts a lot of artists in general. So I think all artistic scenes are doing pretty well right now because of that factor. And yeah, for the music I'm doing, it's perfect because Peter Broderick is there, and Dustin O'Halloran, Sonic Pieces, my label, Erase Tapes is also there, and Eric Scott Wynn from Miasma, more music. Yeah, it seems like the whole neoclassical gang, if you want to call it like that, is definitely there or stops by pretty frequently. So you see all the people there at one point when they play a show or just have a residency or make some holiday there.
All right, sounds good. So I normally ask this to most people who I get on the show. So we're about halfway through 2011. Are there any albums that have stuck out to you so far?
Definitely Dustin O'Halloran's new album. We released that on Fat Cat, and Death Center's new album. I mean, I played on it a little bit and I did production, but I think these guys just, for my ears, made their nicest album then and just came out on type. And then I just sometimes listen to music and I don't know if it's from 2011 or if I'm just grateful that I found it. But yeah, like the Linda Perhex thing I found this year. And yeah.
Is there anything else from this that you found this year? I mean, it doesn't have to be from this year, but...
Which I found out about.
Sure.
The Endless.
Oh, okay.
The band from New York. I think I really liked the new album. I've not listened too much to the older stuff, but I don't know the title yet, but I listen a lot in the car. And yeah, I really liked that album.
All right. So before we get into the last track, let people know where they can buy your albums or where they can listen to it online or all that stuff.
All right. If you want to listen to my music, you should probably just type in my name and buy it on your favorite online page or listen to it on MySpace, or you find me also on Facebook. So Amazon, Boomcut, whatever you prefer. Yeah.
All right. Is there anything you'd like to plug before we get into the last track?
That's a good opportunity to say something ridiculous, but I just won't do it and just let Beth Gibbons have the last word.
Sure. So what's this last track that we're going to play?
It's Rustin' Man from Beth Gibbons. Beth Gibbons, as most people probably know, is a singer from Portishead. What a lot of people I found out don't know is that she did a solo album with Rustin' Man, a member from Talk Talk. And this solo record, I don't know if it, I think it came out in 2005, got a really horrible Pitchfork review. And I think it didn't do really well, but it's definitely her best album. I think I enjoy it more than the whole Portishead albums together. And I'm a big fan also of the new one. But yeah, this Beth Gibbons solo album is worth a listen, and this last track of it.
It's funny. When I heard that track, I wrote down, has a Talk Talky ending. And I didn't know that Rustin' Man was a member of Talk Talk.
So, yeah, he was a bass player.
All right, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay, so thanks, Niels, for doing today's show.
Sure.
All right, we'll just jump into this last track. Here's Beth Gibbons and Rustin' Man with Rustin' Man. Holding you.
How many more days come?